So Srinivas, in the disguise of a gypsy woman, came into the palace. She said, you have to bring me all sorts of articles for puja, and then you have to bring your daughter to me. So Vedavati was sitting before him. And this gypsy woman was so beautiful that Vedavati was so much attracted. In her heart of hearts, she knew that this is my Lord. So then she went into the type of trance and started reading into the future. Oh, this Padmavati is actually the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi. And some time back when she was in a garden with her friends, an elephant came, and that elephant attacked her, and she became very afraid, and then a noble hunter came and saved her. That hunter is the Supreme Lord Vishnu. And Padmavati has fallen in love with that hunter. But Padmavati thinks that the hunter is gone forever. She doesn't know that that hunter is lamenting and crying in separation from Padmavati. And she will only feel happiness when they are united together in marriage. And I think that marriage will take place real soon. In fact, the mother of the Lord is about to come to propose the marriage. So, the queen was quite bewildered by all this. She was listening. Then the gypsy lady left. And immediately after she left, Bakula Devi arrived. She was a very beautiful and stately woman. So the queen honored her, brought her in her palace. She said, yes. She said, I have come with a proposal. The Supreme Lord Krishna has descended into this world and is living on the Venkatadri mountain. He's living in an anthill. But even though he's living in an anthill and he doesn't have anything, he's the proprietor of the entire universe. He desires to have your daughter Padmavati's hand in marriage. Please accept this proposal. So Dharani Devi said, please let me discuss this with my husband, the king. So she presented it before the king. Does it make sense to you that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is living in these Seshadri mountains? We never heard about that. So the king asked his ministers, and they said, there is a great, great sage named Sukha Maharishi. Ask him, he will know. So the king asked, and Sukha Maharishi said, Srinivas is the Lord of Vaikuntha. He has descended into this world. He's living into an anthill. You should immediately arrange for the marriage of your daughter to him. So Akashraj, Dharani Devi, and everyone was rejoicing that Padmavati has finally found the proper match in marriage. So Shuka himself carried a palm leaf to Srinivas, with the king's written desire that he marry his daughter. So Shuka first brought her to Bakula, and the two of them went to the anthill. They called Srinivas out of the anthill. He came out, and Shuka said, read the letter. Immediately upon hearing this, Bakula Devi was beaming in transcendental happiness. The fulfillment of this incarnation for Srinivas wrote a letter back accepting the proposal. To make a long story short, they want me to make it short. Plus, this place, I'm more accustomed to meditating in an anthill than giving a lecture. So my mind isn't working well today. But Lord Srinivas called Garuda and Anantashesh and asked them to give invitations to all the devatas and rishis all over the universe. They all came to this hill to decide how to help the Lord in this marriage ceremony. So as they were dividing up their responsibilities very nicely, Lord Brahma saw Lord Srinivas sitting on the side of his anthill, looking very unhappy. So he asked, "What is the problem?" Srinivas said that, "I have no wealth. How am I going to afford to feed all these millions of people that are going to come? What to speak of offering them garlands and nice arrangements and everything like that?" Well, Lord Brahma said, "It is no problem. You can take a loan from Kuvera. He is here. He's the treasurer of the demigods." Well, Lord Brahma called for Kuvera and said, "Please give Lord Srinivas a loan." Kuvera said, "Forget this loan." He said, "He is the lord of my life. He is the proprietor of everything." He said, "I will immediately, on this very day, I will take all the riches of heaven and present them to your feet, my lord. Please accept it." Lord Srinivas said, "No, I have entrusted all this wealth to you. It is not mine. And while I'm living in this world, I must live according to the customs of the world. So you give me a loan, and I will promise to pay you back this loan with suitable interest. Until the end of Kali Yuga, I will pay the interest of this loan, and then at that time I will pay you the balance of the principal as well." So Brahma drew out the contract. Srinivas signed it, and several other witnesses also signed it. So one of the reasons why this temple is so wealthy is it is understood that the Lord requests all devotees who come for his darshan to help him repay this loan to Kuvera by putting their wealth in the hundi. So people give a lot of money to the hundi. In fact, one of our devotees, I won't mention names. I'll tell you why I won't mention the name later. But one of my godbrothers from America, he came here to Tirupati with me. And he went to the hundi. And he was just going to give like a few, like 1 rupee. But then spontaneously, he took off his wedding ring and threw it in. The gold wedding ring that his wife gave him. So I'm not going to tell his name, because if his wife finds out, she'll be very angry with him. He told her that he lost it swimming or something like that. But anyways, this is the sentiment that people give their gold. You see, if you just watch, I have sat and watched that hundi sometimes for a few minutes, and people take off their earrings and their bangles and their rings and their, whatever's on their toes, and they just throw it all in. And every day, at a certain time, just when you enter into before the darshan, there's a hall. That's where they count all the collections of the day. And you'll see piles and piles, mountains of jewels and earrings and rings and big piles of money. And they count it publicly. The reason they count it publicly is that way nothing can be done privately that's not supposed to be done. That is one of the traditions of the temple. So that was arranged. Then they made grand arrangements. After all these arrangements were made, Lord Brahma noticed that Srinivas looked even more unhappy than ever before. So he asked him, "What is the problem? Why do you look so unhappy?" Srinivas said that I have a very heavy heart because I am feeling separation from Lakshmi, who's at Kolhapur performing tapasya. So Lord Brahma said, "Well, why don't you bring her here?" So the Lord decided the only way she'll come is if he devises a plan. So he sent a messenger. That messenger went to Kolhapur and told Lakshmi Devi that your Lord is living at the Seshadri Mountains and he's very ill. His health is very bad. He wants to see you immediately. So Lakshmi said, "Please bring me to him." So Lakshmi from Kolhapur came, and there she saw thousands and thousands, millions of demigods and rishis and sages and everyone preparing for this marriage. But she thought that they were all there because he was sick. So she felt so bad. She thought, "My Lord is sick and all these people have come and I've waited so long to come to help him. Where is he?" So then Lord Srinivas was pretending to be sick. And he had two of the demigods carry him. He was leaning on them and they were helping him to walk toward Lakshmi Devi. She said, "My Lord, what is wrong with you? I'm very, very sorry I've taken so long to come. How can I help you?" And he said, "Actually, I'm not sick. There's nothing wrong." And Lakshmi Devi said, "Then why are so many people here?" Then she understood. She said, "I know why you have called me. That you have finally come to fulfill your promise to Vedavati. All these people are here for your marriage, and you will soon marry Vedavati, who has incarnated as Padmavati. And I'm very happy to see this, because she has done so much sacrifice. She has worked in such a way just to please me when I was in my form of Sita. So I give you all encouragement to marry her. I will happily become just like her sister. In fact, I will help perform the ceremonial bath for you for this marriage ceremony." So when all of the guests and great souls saw Lakshmi Devi's very much cooperative and happy mood, they rejoiced. Then Lakshmi and Parvati actually performed the bathing ceremony for Srinivas. And when he came out from his bathing ceremony, he was decorated with beautiful jewels and garments. And meanwhile, Agni and Varuna, they were the head cooks. They prepared a huge feast for millions of people. And Vayu was in charge of serving. So when the Lord saw all the prasad that was prepared, the bhoga, he said, "This prasad has to be offered. This bhoga has to be offered." So Brahma asked, "Who are we going to offer it to?" And Lord Srinivas said, "It should be offered to Lord Narsingadev." It is said it was offered to Ahovalandar Singha. We were there yesterday and here today. There's a special connection between these two places. In fact, every year on the day celebrating the marriage of Srinivas and Padmavati, they send a donate the Balaji temple, Venkateshwar temple, sends a large donation to the Ahovalam, their Singha temple, just to show their appreciation for his accepting the offerings on his marriage day. So Lord Nrsimhadev made it all Mahaprasad, and there were so many millions of people that there were lines of devotees covering the entire seven hills. And Vayudev had it all served out very nicely, very expertly. Then they had the procession to Narayanpur, where Akashraj and Vasudam and the brother of Akashraj, Tondaman, they greeted Srinivas and his party. Then Dharani Devi brought out Padmavati. There was the exchange of garlands, and the wonderful wedding took place. It lasted 11 days of festivities. Then Bakula Devi told the Lord that now it is time to go to our own place. So since the Lord was living in an anthill, and it wasn't such a nice place to bring Padmavati, who was a queen, they decided to live at the hermitage of Agastya Muni, which was also on these hills near Tirumala. After some time, Padmavati noticed that her beloved was looking very sad. She understood in her heart immediately what it was, that, my lord, you are feeling separation from Lakshmi Devi, who is living alone in Kolhapur. You should bring her here at once. We will all live together. The Lord said, but she's angry. I don't know if she will come. Padmavati then spoke words of wisdom, the words of a woman, to a man to understand what is the nature of a woman. Men cannot understand what is the nature of a woman. And women cannot understand what is the nature of man. But women understand the nature of women, and men understand the nature of men. Sometimes. She explained that women are like children. They need someone to please them and to show great affection to them. It's not their fault. They are made that way. So you should pacify her by pleasing her and giving her this type of affection. And she will be happy to come back. I am also feeling very sad that she is so lonely living in Kolhapur. So she told the Lord that I will stay here at the hermitage and you go to Kolhapur and bring her back. So the Lord traveled to Kolhapur. When Lakshmi Devi found out he was coming, she disappeared. She went to the hermitage of Kapila Muni. The Lord searched all over Kolhapur. How many of you have searched around Kolhapur before? He couldn't find her anywhere. So he went into a pond of water where there was a big, big lotus, and he decided he would just perform tapasya until Lakshmi would return to him. He was performing such severe tapasya, Indra couldn't recognize who he was. He thought he was a rishi trying to take over his planet. So Indra sent some apsaras to make him fall down. The Lord saw these apsaras dancing and smiling and glancing and smiling. And so the Lord, from his own body, came this even more beautiful personality who completely eclipsed the beauty and the grace of all the apsaras. So they became very embarrassed. They understood he's the supreme personality of Godhead. We should not do this. So they reported it to Indra, and Indra was very much begging forgiveness. But the Lord said, you just take my apsara and don't worry about it. So the Lord continued his tapasya. And his tapasya was so much that actually flames started coming. Transcendent flames. And Lakshmi Devi herself from Kapila Dev's hermitage could feel the spiritual effects of his tapasya. So she asked Lord Kapila Dev, what should I do? Lord Kapila Dev told her, that you should return to him. Actually, Bhrigu Bhuti may have made an offense by kicking him on the chest. But what is the result of that? Now it has been established clearly for the whole world throughout time that Lord Vishnu is the supreme worshipable object, that he is the ultimate lord of all lords. So Lakshmi Devi, what she did is she entered into the bottom of the stem of that lotus flower the Lord was meditating upon. She traveled up the stem and she came out right on top of the lotus, sitting next to the Supreme Personality of God. And when the Devatas saw Lakshmi Narayan sitting together on the top of this lotus, they all rejoiced and began to worship them. Narada Muni told Bhrigu Muni that I think you should beg forgiveness from Lakshmi Devi. At that time, Bhrigu Muni fell at the feet of Lakshmi Devi, weeping and crying, and saying, told her, I am begging, please forgive me for my offense. I have caused you such pain in your heart by what I have done by kicking Lord Narayan. I'm a fool, I'm a rascal, I'm a sinner, please forgive me. Lakshmi Devi replied, no, you did no offense. You are forgiven. But actually, everything the Lord does, everything he does, has a divine purpose. This was all his transcendental pastime. Be happy. So Bhrigu, weeping in gratitude, became very happy. At that time, the Supreme Lord, Venkateshwar, accepted Lakshmi again by giving her residence upon his chest. Then Lakshmi and Srinivas returned to the ashram of Agastya Muni, where Vakula Devi and Padmavati greeted them, and together they lived very happily for a long, long time on this hill of Tirumala. Srinivas ordered the brother of Akashraj, whose name is, I believe, Tondaman, to build a temple for him. The temple was built. The demigods, the sages, would come here to worship the Lord every day. But the Lord decided that he was going to return to Vaikuntha. On the request of all the demigods and the great devotees, the Lord then, right before their very eyes, he transformed his form into the deity of Sri Venkateshwar, where he has been worshipped with great devotion by devotees for thousands and thousands and thousands of years since. Vain means sin. Like the great king Vena, he means the king of sins. So Vena means sins, and Katta means to remove, to wash away, or to cut. So Venkata means He who cuts away removes all sins. Venkateshwar means that Lord who removes all sins from the hearts of his devotees. It is these sinful propensities that stand between us in our ecstatic relationship with the Supreme Lord. And it is this prayer that we should offer to Sri Venkateshwar. Many people come here asking for material benedictions. But when you approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead, why should we ask him for something so cheap, temporary, and useless as something material? He's eager to give you the eternal wealth of the spiritual world. He's eager to give you pure bhakti, that treasure which can bring about real happiness in your life. But as long as we have these sinful propensities, then we cannot actually find real happiness. In the highest sense, any desire separate from pleasing Krishna is sinful. Because everything is the property of God. Your mind is the property of the Lord. Your body is the property of the Lord. To want to use anything for our own pleasure is actually stealing what belongs to the Lord for ourselves. To claim proprietorship over anything is, in the highest spiritual sense, sinful. Stealing. Even pious people are sinful from the spiritual point of view. So this is our prayer, Venkateshwar. Please, we are not so concerned just that the Lord removes the sinful reactions to our past sins. We are more concerned that he cleanses away that propensity to enjoy separate from him from within our heart. In the Christian religion and many other religions, people go to the church or the mosque or the temple and pray to the Lord to forgive them for their sins. And certainly, that begging of forgiveness for our sins is required. However, a real Vaishnav goes way beyond that. In fact, a devotee doesn't want to avoid the reactions of sins. My Lord, if I have sinned, then do whatever you want to punish me. I deserve worse. But please forgive me. Give me whatever sinful reaction, give me whatever punishment is necessary, but please forgive me. And a devotee prays, please remove this tendency to enjoy apart from you. Remove this tendency for sense gratification and egoism that causes all these sins. And let me be your unmotivated servant. This is the prayer of a Vaishnava. Nadanamna janamna sundarim kavitam vajagadisha kamaye mama janmani janmanishwari bhavatad bhaktirohit kitu. I do not want wealth or women. I do not want fame or followers. Not even liberation from sins. My Lord, I want to serve you unconditionally. Birth after birth after birth. So the Lord here is called upon by Venkateshwar. If we pray properly, he will certainly respond to our prayers and remove from the core of our heart the desires for material enjoyment. That was Prahlad's prayer to Lord Narsingadev. Prahlad wanted nothing. When Lord Narsingadev insisted on a benediction, he said, if it pleases you, give me this one benediction. In the core of my heart, there will no longer remain any desire for material enjoyment. That is Venkateshwar. He removes that desire and replaces it, the desire to hear his glories, chant his holy names. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. How did everyone enjoy this yatra? Tonight there's a program, but it's many people. Our intimate little small group like we have now will not be so easily together tonight, some thousands of people. So this is our last chance in our little group to be together. When we came on our South Indian Yatra a few years ago, there was about 200 devotees. How much? How many? There were 250 last time. We were thinking, how will we manage such a yatra? This year there's about 550, and it seems very small. In Vrindavan, it was 800. And there was hardly any inconvenience due to numbers. Did all of you experience that? It's either because we're in India and people are just used to crowds. Or we're just becoming very transcendentalized. Because of the intimacy of the association of devotees, there's really no inconvenience. We have a nice, spacious room without devotees. A very inconvenient situation. But when there's so many devotees and all of them are enthusiastic to talk about Krishna, hear about Krishna, chant about Krishna, enthusiastic to serve one another, then the more the devotees, the more wonderful the experience. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was dancing to Chan Kazi's house. There were hundreds and thousands, millions of people. But yet, no one was thinking the streets are crowded. Everyone was just seeing every devotee as the effulgent messenger of the Lord to bring bliss to their life. This particular yatra was very different than all other yatras. I think every yatra has its own very special, unique quality that's different than all other yatras. And when we ask devotees to compare, it's impossible to compare one yatra to another. It's impossible to even think which one was better than the other, because each one is in its own category. But it is our prayer that the experiences of coming to these holy places will remain permanently imprinted within our hearts, especially a prayer that the loving relationships that are developed between the devotees on these yatras continue to be nourished throughout the rest of the year and throughout the rest of our lives. A very, very special opportunity. Devotees really have nothing else to do except be together for so many weeks. Ordinarily, we come in the temple on Sundays and we meet, and then we go back to our families and our duties in this world. Well, these yatras are a nice chance. People to come from all directions, just be with each other with no other purpose than trying to become Krishna conscious. After many, many births, we've come to this human life. And our acharyas teach us the rarest thing in the human life is the association of devotees. To learn how to value that is a necessary preliminary stage to making spiritual advancement. By material calculations, for 550 people to be riding in buses and climbing mountains, crowding together and eating together, it's inevitable that there'll be fights. In America, there would be fist fights. Maybe people would probably have guns and knives at each other by now. But because Vaishnavas, there's hardly even a disagreement. When we're with devotees, it's an opportunity and also a test. It's a test to see how much we really want to progress on the spiritual path by being tolerant, respectful, kind to others, despite what comes upon yourself. It's an opportunity to serve. These birds have been telling me to stop this class for a long time. I think I should respect their appeal. I think they're speaking on behalf of all of you. Just what I'm talking about, that you're so respectful and tolerant that even though I'm torturing you, I feel like Hiranyakashipu torturing 550 prahlads. Long, terrible classes. And all of you are so polite and respectful that you won't just get up and leave. You won't stand up and say, why don't you just close your mouth for once? Because you're such Vaishnavas. But Krishna, knowing that you won't say anything, he's speaking through the birds. Well, if I do not get the opportunity again, I would like to thank all of you very, very much. Extremely grateful. Incredible experience you have given me. I'm almost finished. I promise, just give me 2 more minutes. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki.
For further details, please contact Radhanath Swami Tape Ministry. Address is International Society for Krishna Consciousness, Sri Radha Gopinath Mandir, 7 KM Munshi Marg, Chowpatty, Bombay 400007, India.